It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanzus.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Danny Meringue.
And then I went to this movie theater. This is it. I made a noise like this.
Dusty Hera.
Then this was horrible. All the people started getting sick and throwing up all over each other.
I'm beginning to like this kid much.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080.
Are you good?
The Fan.
Hour 3 here on Danny and Dusty on a Wednesday afternoon when you're listening on 10:80 a.m. watching along on youtube.com/1080amthefan or twitch.tv/1080amthefan. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for listening along, watching along, wherever you may be on this wonderful Wednesday. We're kind of up against it right now, and we're definitely going to want a little more time for the Zion topic, but we were just diving into the last two-minute report for the Warriors-Grizzlies last night, and it is a predictable bloodbath. There were two incorrect calls, two incorrect non-calls. And again, this can only be done in the final 2 minutes, and boy, were there plenty to choose from. The most egregious and obvious one being the NBA said, yeah, no, that was a block by Pods. It was a clean block. Should not have been called a foul. It was dumb. Yes, we got it wrong.
The other three went against the Memphis Grizzlies, and Warriors fans were like, see, we're getting hosed too. Turns out
you weren't. And actually, probably the most impactful call in this is with 7.3 seconds remaining. It's still being a one-point game. The ball went off Steph Curry. Yeah. He was the last to touch the ball, and it was awarded to the Warriors in a one-point game where the Grizzlies would have had the ball with 7.3 seconds remaining. They also said there was a non-call, and this is the one that I mentioned earlier in the show, Scottie Pippen driving to the rim, and with about a minute and a half to go in the game, Draymond smacks him, and there's no call. That would have been Draymond Green's sixth foul right there.
Mm-hmm.
It did not happen until a little bit later when he stupidly ran into Santi Aldama, I believe it was, on an inbounds, which I don't know what he was doing there. But following that shot, Zach Edey immediately gets a putback that is probably one of the most egregious goaltends I've ever seen in my life. And that basically just kind of canceled that out.
Yeah.
But that also would have been Draymond Green's sixth foul.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was an S show for the refs last night, and the last two-minute report confirms that.
Way to go, guys.
Congratulations.
Way to go. That's so fun.
Yikes, dog.
I'm glad, though, that what we all were feeling in the moment, it was actually true. That it was a very poorly officiated game. And that's the only 2 minutes, four incorrect calls in 2 minutes of gameplay.
Yeah. With all of them having varying degrees of massive impact.
Yes.
Draymond Green not being on the floor for the final minute 30.
And before that, it was even more. Like, there were more calls. This just starts at the two-minute mark. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, the fourth quarter, like, the game general was not officiated well, but the fourth quarter overall was officiated horribly.
That's brutal, dude.
Horribly. All right, it is Wednesday. It means it is 2:15-ish, which means it's time for Fact or Fluke, some things that we're discussing, whether or not they're facts or flukes, coming up next year on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's 2:15-ish here on Dan and Dusty on a Wednesday afternoon, which means it's time for Fact or Fluke, some stories we are going to dive into and definitively decide. Are they a fact or fluke?
Woo-wee! All right, we ready to get this thing going?
Get this thing going.
Giants GM Joe Shane says he would allow Travis Hunter to play both ways. Fact or fluke, I went and I looked this up on Pro Football Focus.
Mm-hmm.
So your median receiver snaps, like I went to like the 100th guy on the list,
mm-hmm.
played around 800 snaps. Yeah. There's a lot of receivers on the field, right? So there's a lot of them. And they're going to be playing a lot, not coming off. You're looking at about like 350 to 400 for corners.
Mm-hmm.
Fact or fluke, Travis Hunter will play more than 1,200 snaps in the NFL.
I'm going to go with fluke, but I do believe that a team is going to let him try to be, you know, wide receiver 3, CB 2.
Yeah.
I do think that whoever drafts him. And basically, I think the reality will smack him in the face that he can't do that. He's got to pick a side. But I think a team's going to let him.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with fluke. That's a lot of snaps.
Yeah, fluke on the snaps.
Especially when you look at how, I mean, the wear and tear on your body over, like, you're not playing a 12-game schedule. You're playing against bigger, stronger, faster guys. It's going to be, that is a load to bear for any player. And so I'm going to go with a fluke on that one because, I mean, if you just look at it, like Terry McLaurin played the most snaps of any wide receiver last year, and I think he was at like 1,176. And when you're playing both ways, you got to buck up and go, baby.
Which means you're not getting breaks.
No, sir.
So while the snap count might be high, you don't get the breaks that he's getting while the defense is on the field.
Nope. I'm going to go fluke.
Yep. Number two, the Rockets should be underdogs to the Golden State Warriors in their first round matchup. Fact or fluke?
They should be.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go fact on that. Jimmy Butler and Steph Curry, that pairing, what are they, 25-7 when they're both playing?
Two of the best to ever do it.
I'm going to go fact on that one. But 52 wins and stomping them just a couple of weeks ago makes you second guess it, but I'm going to go fact.
Everything in
me, seven-game series,
the traditionalist, the seven-game series, the playoff experience, all that stuff says that it should be fact. I'm going to go with fluke, and it has nothing to do with Steph or Jimmy and everything to do with everyone else. Last night, the Golden State Warriors score 121 points. No one on their roster outside of Steph or Jimmy scored more than 12 points.
Yeah.
The Rockets, what do they do? Do they play defense?
Yes, they do.
Do they have arguably the best athlete in the entire NBA on their roster?
Yeah, they
who
sure
is a
do.
Monster defensive player in Amen Thompson?
They sure do.
Do they have Dylan Brooks?
Yes, they do.
Do they have Steven Adams? Do they have Tari Eason? Do they have the basically the blueprint for a team that you would want to take on this team?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Fluke. Okay. When we do our picks for the playoffs, I'm going to pick the Rockets in this series.
Ooh.
And the youth, the inexperience, the lack of battle scars, it's there.
Yeah.
But you do have Fred VanVleet, you do have Dylan Brooks, and you do have Ime Udoka, and you do have Steven Adams. You are not lost on playoff experience.
All right. All right. Fact or fluke here. Oh, by the way, I had my offensive and defensive. Defensive guys play more snaps than the offensive guys. Mm. 1,200 snaps for Trent McDuffie last year. 1,206.
Damn.
Mike Jackson of the Carolina Panthers, 1,204. There were...
So 1,200's doable on that side of the ball.
On defense alone, yeah. I'm looking here. You're looking at about 20 guys that played over 1,000.
I could see 700... 750 on defense, 350, 400 on offense. I could see it.
12, 14, 16, 18, 22, 4, 24.
So 20 snaps a game on offense, kind of a deal?
Yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah. But that's the hard part, though. If you want to keep him off of the field, Travis Hunter, that is, if you want to keep him off the field on defense, you can't do it because teams will just pick on you if one of your best corners isn't on the field. Golly. All right. Fact or fluke here. If a situation played out similar to the Nico Iamaliava situation at Tennessee with your favorite school, you'd have less interest in college football. Because I see this a lot from college football fans. You'd have less interest if you had a guy who was like, nope, all about the money, I'm out, dude.
I'm going to say fluke, and it's not to the same standard because... it's not the quarterback. USC went through this similarly with now Oregon Duck, Bear Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, good luck to you, big fella.
Yeah.
Good luck to you. And, you know, the talent's there and all that kind of stuff. But on the Tennessee side of things, the program has to be bigger than the player. And so, but it is different when it's the quarterback, and it's different when it's that guy in your room. Had it been Caleb Williams, probably would have hit me a little bit different. Probably would have hit me a little bit different, but I would have probably leaned in. I think if anything, this could be a galvanizing force for Tennessee fans in a bleep you, Nico kind of situation. I don't know if you saw at the spring game, the Nico jerseys that start with IAM.
Mm-hmm.
IMAB was taped over a lot of them. And I think that's become a kind of a galvanizing force. So I'm going to say fluke.
I'm going to go with fluke. For this reason, and this reason only, it's probably already happened at your favorite school.
Mm-hmm.
The reality, it probably has already happened at your favorite school. It just has not been public because Nico's camp has made this into a complete disaster.
Oh, full-on clown show.
Yep.
All right, a last one of the day, and this will lead us into our next topic at the top of the hour, which will be bottom of the hour. The Blazers should pursue Zion Williamson or another distressed asset star in the offseason. And I think you could put in, Zion will be the one that we talk about, but I think you could also put LaMelo Ball in there. You could probably put Trae Young in there. You could possibly put John Morant in there. There's going to be quite a few of those guys, I think, in this offseason.
Fact. There's one name that stuck out to me when you said that, and that's the fact.
Mm.
Yep. We'll talk about it.
I'm going to say fluke in the sense that they have to. They should kick tires.
Mm-hmm.
You should always, if anything ever has shown you, you make the freaking phone call. It's Rob Pelinka and Nico Harrison. You take the phone call and you see.
Yeah. There's a pull up at Danny and Dusty on X, Twitter. Should the Trailblazers kick the tires on a potential Zion Williamson trade? Yes or no? You go vote.
There's 139 votes on it already, and it's been up for 12 minutes, 14 minutes?
Not a long time.
No, people are chiming in already, which is what we will do next. There is an edict that has been handed down to new general manager of the New Orleans Pelicans to find a new home for Zion Williamson.
Joe Dumars.
Two phones himself. Should the Portland Trailblazers make that phone call? Coming up next. But first, here's the Big Kahuna with Sports Center Update.
You ever had a Big Kahuna burger?
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
All right. So I have in my season review slash going into Blazers offseason stuff, I have said I'm not going to dive too much into the transactional stuff until May 12th. Like May 13th is when I'm going to get heavy into it because it's just so many different paths right now. I could say, oh, the Blazers should pursue player X. Well, if depending on where they draft, that could drastically change. And I think that's also true in the Blazers' pursuit of a big piece this offseason. The big name that is out there right now, and there will be others that follow, particularly if the Memphis Grizzlies get unceremoniously either knocked out in the last play-in game or if they get dusted by the Thunder, which will happen, you could potentially see some changes there and around the rest of the NBA as well. But Zion Williamson is a guy that... This is not a shocker to if you cover the NBA. Dustin, you know, you've talked about this off air for 2 years. Zion Williamson has been available.
Very much so.
But David Griffin tried to make it work because the talent is so overwhelming. When he's on the floor, he's 27-8-5. Like, he's singularly dominant. His ability to finish at the rim and be a playmaker is otherworldly. And you get enamored with that talent because it is so dominant. I mean, we haven't had a rim finisher like him really since Shaq, a guy that is just, you can't do anything with him. When he gets downhill, his ability to finish and create around the rim is unmatched. And so he's going to hit the market. Should the Portland Trailblazers kick that tire?
Boy, this is tough because he is really good. But he comes with a ton of baggage. Mm-hmm. So much baggage, in fact, the clauses that are in his contract
are insane.
They're wild. So he's entering the final 3 years of his deal are not guaranteed.
None.
Which is rare when the number is 39.4, 42.1, 44.8.
When you're talking about a player of this magnitude, it is unheard of.
He signed
for the lack of guarantees in his deal.
$197 million deal. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, this is where these are the stipulations on his that guarantees his contract. The criteria is 20% becomes guaranteed if he passes all six of his weigh-in checkpoints during the 24-25 season,
which was 295 pounds.
He had to be 295.
Okay? So, as a point of reference, and I don't know if it's been reported anywhere, I've talked to people in New Orleans that before this contract, he was upwards of 330 pounds.
40% of his 25-26 salary becomes guaranteed if he plays in 41 or more games during the 24-25 season. He did not.
Mm-hmm.
He only played in 30 games. Okay. 20 more if he plays in 51%, 20 more if he plays in 61% of the games. So, 20% for the weigh-ins, 40% for just playing in 41 games. That gets you to 60%. 80% of his deal is fully guaranteed if he plays in 51 the previous year, and then 20 more percent if he plays in 61 games. He has only played in more than 61 games once in his career. He's been in the league since 2019. Okay? This is...
There's also injury protection for his right foot. If he injures his right foot, you can void his deal.
So, think about what Zion has done here. So, right off the bat, whoever is trading for him...
You have a lot of protections.
Well, you're already looking at... He only hit the marker that we know of for 20% of his contract. Because the weigh-in... We don't know if he hit or not.
I've been told that he was. He was underweight.
Okay, so he's got 20% of that. He did not hit any of the other markers. 40% for the 41 games? Nope. 51 games? Hell no. 61, good golly, Miss Molly, no. He only played in 30 games this past season. That right there, it says because his number that you're trading for isn't this what he ended up hitting. It's what the contract is, right? His cap number, but it's not fully guaranteed. Am I correct on that?
Yes.
Okay, so you're trading for a guy that is against the cap. He will account for all of the numbers that we just said.
Until it gets adjusted at the end of the year. But you don't get that until the end of the year, and you have those protections baked in. And also, if you do decide to void his contract because of violation of said guarantees, you are off the hook for the remaining.
The most games he has ever played in a season is 70 games, and he did it in the 23-24 season. So
the first full season back out of COVID.
Other than that, he's played in 24, 61, which wouldn't that be a full season? COVID year?
Yeah, COVID year, yeah.
So full season there. Did not play all of 21-22 with an injury. 22-23, played in only 29 games that season. 70 games, and then this year, 30 games. I cringe at that injury history. And that's why I say no. No to Zion, because at this point, what is the year we have seen Zion Williamson where he is not injured?
I mean, he's always going to have something. He's always going to have something. That's just the reality of it. Unless somehow, some way, he lost basically 30, 40 more pounds and was playing at like 260.
Yeah, he's 20. He'll be 25 in July.
Look, I've
and we have not seen him healthy since even when he was 18 years old. No. He was never healthy.
I mean, even before that. I mean, it wasn't just that. I remember his Hoop Summit year. He didn't play because he had a broken wrist.
Yeah.
So I saw Zion when he was 17 at Hoop Summit. I've seen Zion when he has come to town, and like, he is a physical marvel that you cannot truly fathom until you get next to him. And I'm not talking fat. I'm talking about how big he is.
He's
overweight, all those things. He's also one of the most dynamic, explosive, powerful humans I've ever been next to.
Ever. It is. But that's why he's always hurt.
Yeah, because he's quite literally too powerful for his own body, and then he's out of shape on top of it.
Yeah.
Like, the only way that whole thing stays together is if he is in otherworldly shape. And even then, you have to squint. Here's where it gets interesting for the Portland Trail Blazers. The previous general manager, David Griffin, had a relationship with the Portland Trail Blazers. Obviously, he struck the deal for CJ McCollum. I was told the second Neil Olshey got fired, David Griffin reached out to a mutual acquaintance and inquired, how can I get CJ McCollum, from Joe Cronin? And that's where that deal came from. And he was always interested in getting CJ. Beyond that, leading into Shaedon Sharpe's draft, the New Orleans Pelicans wanted Shaedon Sharpe. And that was, I think that's been reported publicly now. Willamette Weekly was a deep dive on Shaedon Sharpe a couple months ago. But the Pelicans... They wanted Shaedon Sharpe, and they were trying to see if the Blazers were going to take Tyson Daniels or Shaedon Sharpe, and they ultimately obviously took Shaedon Sharpe, but they had discussions around that. A year later, Scoot Henderson. Scoot Henderson was a player that the New Orleans Pelicans and David Griffin highly coveted. You got to remember, Scoot Henderson, Marietta, Georgia. It's not that far away. They right in their own backyard, basically, and they were looking at a point guard, and they were looking at those opportunities. they came, not, I should say they came close to striking a deal, but there were real negotiations between the Portland Trail Blazers for the rights to the number 3 overall pick and Zion Williamson. That happened. I will say that factually, unabashedly, I can confirm that 100%. The Blazers did not opt to do it. I have said it over basically the last 2 years now when I have mentioned transactions that have been on the table for the Blazers that I have said that I agreed with the front office not taking them. That's one of them.
Yep. And I agree. It's not just the injury history, which we have a wrist, we have a knee at Duke.
It's the whole lower body.
You have a torn meniscus his rookie year. Mm-hmm. You had a thumb sprain that held him out for a lot of games his second year. You had the right foot injury that missed an entire season. Mm-hmm. And then you go hamstring, calf, ankle, back. Holy, that's 10 injuries. We just go through 10 injuries. The guy is not 25 years old.
So there was a period.
And for the texter that's texting this, Sam Bowie and Greg Oden, we don't like injuries here.
No. And it's not just that. It's not just the injury stuff.
And there's
it's not
everything else.
But there's the weight management stuff. And I don't know if this has ever been reported, but I'll say it. Zion Williamson was basically banished to Lake Oswego for 4 months to get his ass together 2 years ago.
For Nike. Yeah, because Nike had just released his signature shoe. Mm-hmm. They were like, "We need this guy healthy. We've got to."
And they needed to get him out of New Orleans and around away from everything that was around him. And basically, it was a get straight kind of boot camp.
And did it work?
Well, I mean, what year did he play 70 games?
Very next year.
So. A lot of this is the wrong people around him. A lot of this is a Zion issue. A lot of this is I've been told his stepfather is, again, family, and having the wrong people around you are very problematic, and having to deal with that kind of stuff. In the same token, what's the price?
If the price is right, you kick the tires on it.
If I told you that they could get Zion Williamson for DeAndre Ayton and Scoot Henderson, would you do it?
Again, depends on where you fall in the lottery, but yeah, you probably I think I'd pull the trigger on that one.
You probably consider it, right?
Yeah.
At bare minimum, it goes to the council.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and again, this isn't me like saying no to Scoot or anything along those lines. It's
more no to DA. It's where the money works.
Yeah. And it's like, where would the Pelicans probably look? I mean, as far as how their roster is built right now, one of the possible transactions for Zion was Jared Allen. They're clearly looking as good as East Missy looked for them this year. He's still not a starting caliber center.
Yeah,
and DeAndre Ayton is now. I've heard mixed reviews of what the Pelicans thought of DA over the last 2 years. Because this was something that was still being kind of kicked around. Griffin, I think, was more out than in as it pertained to DA. I don't know what Joe Dumars thinks of DA. I don't know what Joe Dumars thinks of Scoot Henderson. Would he want Shaedon Sharpe? That obviously becomes a lot dicier of a situation because I think if you polled anybody around the league, who would they believe in more as a top-end talent? I think most of them, despite Shaden's inconsistencies, I think people would say that the ceiling is higher on Shaden than on Scoot.
Right.
Would you say the same thing?
I would say right now, yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair.
So, but Zion's one of a handful of names. I mentioned a couple of names, and you said there was one name on there that did pique your interest. Who was it?
It's just because of the immense amount of talent. It's Ja. I'd mess with that level of crazy. I would mess with that. You saw him last night. That dude's going to ride for you. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the big problems with Ja is that Ja has not left the state of Tennessee.
No.
And that's a big problem.
Murray everybody, State and all the people around
him.
Well,
everybody is still around him that's always been in his life.
And if there's one thing about Portland that does happen to players is, yeah, they get up around here and it's 85% white, but you can't go anywhere or do anything stupid without getting caught.
Right.
Which is, I will be bluntly honest, it is a reason why not the reason, but is one of the many reasons why it is hard to get players to Portland, because they are in a fishbowl.
Yeah.
But look, if Ja was made available, and it would cost substantial, despite the negative marks against Ja, who has his own litany of injuries to deal with.
Yes, he does.
And then obviously all of the off-court stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm with you in the sense of you should definitely kick tires. You should always make the phone call.
Yep.
I am not there as far as, let's just say the money isn't perfect. It's close for DA and Scoot. If you're saying that's the crux of the deal, I'd have to take it to the council.
Okay.
I'd have to go, okay, I need current medicals. I need intel on every single thing. And even then, it would be with so much hesitance. I would just sit there just screaming. And the fan text line right now is, Portland is a perfect spot for Zion for that exact reason. Look, if you're looking, if you're trying to convince yourself that it would work, Nike bringing him up here and out of everything and then having him have the season that he had.
Right.
Is the most, at least to me, convincing evidence.
Yeah.
Because it's having, look, Nike has made some bets over the last couple of years that have not worked out for them.
No, they and have not.
Having him in their backyard, I think would be a very good, like, green flag, as it were, in the mark of, like, not only would we be supporting of this, and I used we as the Trailblazers, but also the Swoosh. They would have vested. Who was the last great Nike athlete here?
That lived here?
I mean, like, as part of the Blazers. Sheed?
Wasn't Brandon Roy Nike?
Oh, that's right. Brandon, well, his was such a short period. Yeah. That I forget. Yeah.
But that would be hit. That would be it. Brandon Roy.
The ambassador, as it were.
Yeah.
If they could redeem his reputation, his value, with everything behind it,
would be nice. It would be nice.
And again, to the same point with Ja, like, also a guy who came, I can't even squeeze my fingers together close enough to describe how close he got to getting his shoe ripped away from him.
No doubt about it.
And they invested a lot in him. So the poll is up at Danny and Dusty. Should the Trailblazers kick the tires on Zion Williamson and everything else that gets in the way for that? All right, as we wrap up today's show, a quick question. Is Shedeur Sanders really a first-round quarterback? Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan. All right, Hot Rod here. We're just going to get some of your reactions as we wrap up today's show as it pertains to Trailblazers in the pursuit of a distressed star. And I see this all the time. And it just doesn't matter. I think the core issue here goes back to Phil Knight needing to own the Blazers if we're ever going to do anything. This team is not going anywhere. Phil Knight does nothing for the Blazers. He has been in their backyard for 40 years. It has not impacted a free agent once. It just doesn't. It goes far, far, far beyond.
I think if he owns the team, it might. But Phil's old, and like that's the bigger issue with that. I would love to see Phil Knight as the owner of the Blazers.
I would if he was 25 years younger.
Yeah, I don't really care. I'd still love it. I'd still love it. Dude still carries weight, and he would care passionately for however long it was, and he wouldn't be owning the team alone. We know that already.
Oh, yeah, I know, but you're just fighting your way through the whole will and trust situation all over again.
Yeah, we're already doing that, but at least there would be a succession plan that more tightly wound that would come into place in this one.
So. Another one here. Has there ever been a player that has had injury problems and then not had injury problems? It's rare, but it does happen. Steph Curry's ankles were made of glass, and he hasn't had ankle issues basically now in 10 years.
Yeah, and that was right around when he was 25 because he was old when he came in.
Ray Allen was another guy who had injuries early on with the Milwaukee Bucks. Was totally fine. You brought up Grant Hill.
Grant Hill in Phoenix.
While he was a different player after those ankles, because I think he had one ankle fused, if I remember right. Yeah. He lost stuff there. But also, Phoenix is also looked at as like the fountain of youth for the NBA. Their training staff has been
Well, Amari Stoudemire in that vein, too.
Yeah.
He had microfracture surgery, and then he went to Phoenix and was like, oh, okay.
We're still good here. So, Ja would do a knifing celebration, and no one would care.
Oh, if he came to Portland?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's harsh.
Yeah, I know. I think a lot of people here obviously when you look at Ja versus Zion, that's different issues.
Yep.
Ja is dinged up a lot. It's a lot like Allen Iverson, Dwayne Wade, because little guy go to rim a lot, hit ground a lot. Mm-hmm. You're going to wear and tear. There's an expiration tag on Ja's body. When you have otherworldly athleticism, yeah, unless you're Russell Westbrook, who's built like a truck, there's a ticking time bomb ready to go.
I'd like to see it here, though.
Look, in that draft, Ja and Zion were in the same draft. I had Ja ahead of Zion because I was worried Zion's legs were going to explode. I just was. It was just,
too powerful, man.
I mean, when you watch a guy blow out a shoe, and it's not because the shoe was crap, it's because he generates so much force that he blew the seams on his shoe.
Yeah. All right. A lot of feedback. We got the poll up at Danny and Dusty. You can go ahead and vote on that.
It's crazy. It is a dead heat.
Dead heat. Mixed bag. But I've said, take a swing. Make a swing. If you're going to do it, make sure the price is right. But sure.
Kick them tires. Yep. I'm okay with that.
It does appear that Colin Cowherd was right. Bruce Feldman now reporting. Nico Iamaliava is headed to UCLA and will be the quarterback for the Bruins. Good luck, Deshaun.
Good luck with that.
All right, that does it for us on this Wednesday. We'll be back with the Thursday edition of Danny and Dusty. Hey, have a great Wednesday.
Enjoy the sun.
Yeah, yeah. Up next is 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. Prime time with Isaac and Souk. Have a great day.
Bye.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.